It's Tony Mac and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mac and the Triplet.
Welcome in, everybody. Tony Mac and the Triplet. This beautiful Saturday morning. Just a little bit of a truncated show today. Out at 10:45 today, so you guys can have your fix of Alabama basketball. We're out 15 minutes short this morning. So if from 10:45 to 11, if you're wondering, hey, where'd Tony Mac, where'd Aaron go? We had to step aside for Alabama basketball. We still have a pretty good show lined up for you today. It is the day before the Super Bowl. We're the last live local show carrying you all the way. How about that? Got a little bit more to get into as well. We got Alabama basketball coming up today. We got Auburn hoops playing again today. We'll discuss how maybe some of you guys are feeling after Alabama, you know, had another letdown game against Missouri. Are they going to get in? What's the SEC picture going to look like the rest of the way? We got a lot of that to get into. 866-485-9867 is how you can get in and share what you want to talk about with Aaron and I. Give us your Super Bowl picks. I really want to know what you think, who you're pulling for, why you're pulling for them. Ready for the Patriots hate to start. You won't get that from me. At Tony Mac, UMP, at A Trip Tennis, at Tony Mac Triplet. You can find all both of our Twitters in the bio of the show's Twitter. Feel free to click that follow button up there. We'd appreciate that. Of course, as always, sitting across from me, sitting across the table, across from the board, these beautiful SEC helmets sitting right up here, the mini ones, not the big ones, helping me drive the conversation, steer you guys right into the Super Bowl tomorrow is my good friend Aaron Triplet. Aaron, why don't you pull that mic a little closer and say hey.
Hello. You wanted me to say hey.
I know everything's a little off right now. Your headphones aren't working. We'll fix that in a minute. We had that problem yesterday.
Yeah, and I was sitting there thinking, just gotten to tweet out my shirt of the week, so I'm doing that as we speak, and showing a little FCS love with the Samford Bulldogs today, so I'm about to tweet that out. I've really thought about wearing my – I've got a couple of Purdue shirts. I really thought about some more college basketball talk with Purdue, but they're one of those that I have that's like extra small because they're so old. So, and because I don't know, call me weird, but I don't like wearing like a gray looking shirt if I'm wearing like gray sweatpants. I don't like wearing the same colored shirt as I am like pants. They have
there
to.
There are a lot of people that feel that way. It doesn't matter to me. I'll wear a white shirt and some white shorts, like white basketball shorts.
I'll do that sometimes, but that's about it. Or like when I played college tennis, we had white shorts with white shirts, but that's different. That's a uniform. But if I'm wearing, especially like gray sweatpants and a gray shirt, I just a big blob of gray. And that also reminds me that wearing the same colored shirt that you are pants, when we took a team picture, I think it was my junior year of college, our colors were red and white, and our coach was wearing, he had on his red shirt, he had on some red long pants, and he had like his undershirt was also red with a red hat. And we made fun of him all year. We said, Coach, you look like a big tomato. In that
big
picture.
Tomato.
You look like a big tomato.
Well, I'm glad to see you're in good form today. We're making jokes. I know your headphones are working, so that might sound a little weird for you, but you're in good spirits, and that's what we appreciate. We're going to need it because we're going to talk heavy about the Super Bowl and one of the teams you hate the most. I just found out right before we came on air, how many teams in the NFL Aaron hates. Like, he uses the word hate. Why do you have so much hate for teams in the NFL? It's not just, I don't really like that team. I don't really like that team. I hate the Falcons. I really don't like the Eagles. I hate the Patriots.
Hate is such a strong word.
And you used it several
and I
times.
Use it. So, I use it way too much. It's definitely, for me, it's an oversaturation People who know me know that I oversaturate the word hate and I over-exaggerate the actual meaning. Strong dislike is a more accurate term. My dad likes to use the term, you need to stop using that. You need to stop using the word hate because it's not, you know, too strong of a word. And it's better to use the word or the phrase not partial to. I'm not partial to them. But I'm not partial to several teams. And I really
then
like.
How are you a fan of the NFL? Because I know you're a big advocate of the NFL. You seem to like that almost more than you do college football anyway. It gets you more excited, definitely. I know the fantasy football aspect of it, but this is a serious question. Like, I didn't realize how many teams you're not partial to in the NFL. So, what drives you to be such a big NFL fan? Because it's not just because you're a big Cowboys fan. It's more than that. You love the NFL, but why if you're not partial to so many teams?
Well, it's a couple different things. Well, I'm a fan of really three teams. I'm a fan of the Carolina Panthers because Cam Newton was an Auburn guy. I led Auburn to the national title, so natural ties there. I've been a fan of the Dallas Cowboys for pretty much my whole life because my dad has been a Cowboys fan. I grew up watching Cowboys games, and I just became a. It really until I got to college really didn't like. Just put all my love into Dallas, but I was always rooting for. I remember when they lost to the Seahawks in a playoff game when Tony Romo dropped that snap. Oh my goodness, I remember that like it was yesterday. Whew. But well, that, and then of course the Green Bay Packers, and I love those. I love all three of those teams. But I do dislike arguably more teams in the NFL. Of course, I've grown up disliking the Patriots, and that's just people are like, why don't you like the Patriots? Like, what's not to like about the Patriots? And I don't know. It's just a thing. It happened when I was young, when they beat the Rams in the Super Bowl, when they kicked a game-winning field goal, because I was pulling for the Rams. I was about, you know, I think I was 6 or 7 years old.
Greatest show on turf. Everybody loved it.
And I was...
Except for me, the year before. But.
And I remember, I think I woke up the next morning, because, of course, school was the next day, and I didn't get to watch all the game. But I remember seeing, you know, on a replay of them kicking that game-winning field goal, and I was thoroughly upset that they lost.
You saw the birth of greatness, is what you saw.
I did, and I've loathed it ever since, and it's just grown. And now I remember watching a game last year. It was the first game that Brady was suspended, and Garoppolo played on Sunday night against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals let it. They blew it. They blew the game. Of course, that kind of happens against New England, and I was so mad. And our buddy Tyler was like, it's like personal with you, isn't it?
It is.
With the Patriots. And I'm like, yeah, it is. For some reason, it's personal. But and then, of course, I have some disdain for the Falcons and the Titans because they're on the local station. And I don't really care for the local teams around as much as some people around here don't like to hear that.
Oh, I know.
And so those are the primary reasons why. And I don't particularly care for the Eagles for obvious reasons. I don't know. It's just. And me and my brother have talked about this before, this using, and I'm once again using the word hate loosely. If you hate something, it at least in sports, it gives you a reason to, if you don't particularly have a rooting interest, it gives you a rooting interest.
Yeah.
Because now I have a rooting interest in this game. I don't like either team, but I'm going to root for Philadelphia like I rooted for Atlanta last year.
See, I've kind of gotten into the sense where I feel like I always need to find a reason to pull for someone. And in that sense, I feel like I need to find a reason to like someone. And sometimes it's because they're not the other team that I don't
like. See, that's solely my reason. Like, the only reason that I'm pulling for Philadelphia is because they're playing New England. If any other team came out of the AFC, I'd be pulling for that team in this game.
As I got older, though, when I was younger, I had that strong pull for one specific team in a big game. If you weren't the team I was pulling for, I hated you. And I had such a strong opinion growing up. And here the last few years, I've really become so neutral. And Super Bowl 42, I was the biggest Giants fan for one game that you'll ever find in that Super Bowl. But then a couple years later, what, 5, 6 years later? Or not even that, three years later, I think.
Yeah, something. You know, like I think Super it was, Bowl, well, they had 2000, it was the 2007 season was the helmet
Super
catch,
Bowl
and then
46,
2011
right?
season was just 4 years,
so
I think.
So 4 years, Super Bowl 46, and I was pulling for the Patriots. I had a different dynamic. I learned to appreciate Tom Brady. I know Bill Belichick's got the past with the whole cheating thing and all that, but I really grew to like Tom Brady and everything he's done. Seeing what he's done with virtually nothing at times. I mean, he's had some great weapons, but then he hasn't a lot of the time. He's had just some guys out there, and I've appreciated that. And then I'm just starting to realize more and more that if my team's not in it, if the Titans aren't playing, which happens often, if Oklahoma in college isn't doing it, I've learned so much about the game of football, which I'm not saying you don't know about the game of football. You are very intelligent in the game. I've learned so much about the game of football that even if I don't have a strong rooting interest, I can sit back and appreciate the game if it's a good one. And what I've come to learn when the Patriots are in the Super Bowl, doesn't matter if they're winning or losing the game. If they win, ultimately win or lose the game, it's going to be a one possession game. And I'm really looking forward to that tomorrow. If the Eagles win, I'm going to celebrate, and it's going to be exciting, and it's going to be fun. If the Patriots win, I'm going to celebrate, it's going to be exciting, and it's going to be fun. I'm so neutral on this game that it's crazy, because last year I was pulling really hard for the Patriots, and I don't mind the Falcons. There are guys on that team I like. But this year, it's such a weird dynamic for me. I've never been like this. I've never not had a squeeze in a game before. But this year, I really truly mean this 100% for the first time ever. I don't care who wins, and it's a great thing. It's not one of the, you know, people say, I don't really care who wins. To me, that's just kind of dismissive. They'll kind of be keeping an eye on it and monitoring the game, and if whatever happens, they're looking for an exciting moment. Me, I'm just looking forward to watching this game unfold. Either way it goes, and it's going to be exciting. Like, and thinking about that, if the Patriots go down and score and it's intense, being able to celebrate that and then on the other end, being able to celebrate the Eagles do something good just because it's good football is something very exciting to me, and I'm excited to experience that tomorrow.
It's just always the Super Bowl is like the biggest event in all of sports in the world, more than likely. I mean, if you actually look at numbers from across in Europe, the El Clasico between Real Madrid and Barcelona actually has more viewers per something. Like, you know, talking about ratings, and they get so many, the ticket sales are so high and all that. But here in the United States, this is the biggest event. Everybody sits, even if you don't care about football, you sit and watch this game. And what drives me nuts the most is when people say, I just watch it for the commercials. Like, yeah, I do get like that people do. I do enjoy the commercials, but they haven't been good lately. And, like, come on.
I'll say this. The Super Bowl might be the only football game ever that I would rather sit at home and watch. I would much rather sit at home and be surrounded by my friends and food, and it's a cheaper option. But you get all the great food. You get to sit down. You get the experience, the commercials. I would rather be live at any national championship game, any other live NFL game, any other live sporting event. Particularly, I would love to be at the live atmosphere. The Super Bowl is the one event that I would much rather sit at home and watch.
See, I'm really the opposite.
I'd like to experience a Super Bowl live. Don't get me wrong, but overall, I think the experience at home would be much better.
I actually prefer the sanctity of like my own house or, you know, just a home setting watching on TV, because when you'd watch that, you know, you have it on the big screen, you have access to food and drinks, and you can get up and go to the bathroom without having to stand in line, you know, and all that, it's just more comfortable. And it is a hassle to go to a game, and it's like it takes so much energy out of you. And I'm okay with going, like, there was a stretch where I went to an Auburn game every year for about 10 years in a row or something, like, or 5 years in a row or something. Several years in a row I went to an Auburn game. It was 10 because I started in 04 and I went every year till 2014, and I hadn't been to one since. But I'd been to one 10 years in a row, and it's exhausting. And I just prefer, you know, sitting at home on the couch. I will say this. I do enjoy the fan experience of going to a big game. And I don't know if we talked about it on this show. You might have mentioned where I was on, or maybe we canceled that. I don't remember, but when I went to Green Bay this past football season,
yeah.
I don't know if I've brought it up on the show before, but my brother and I and my dad, we took a road trip to Green Bay, Wisconsin, drove out, like, it's 14 hours there, 14 hours back.
Let me ask you something about that really quick. The older you get, like, are you just kind of, like, going to hope everybody forgets who actually played in that game? That way, when you get older, you can kind of tell your kids, yeah, I was there when Rodgers played in Green Bay. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I watched Aaron Rodgers play.
The funny thing about this is we we found a weekend that we were available to go. Like, everybody, we could all go, and then we could get back. You know, it was just, we had to cram it all in, leave on a Friday night, late on a Friday, drive all day Saturday, get there, hang out that night in Green Bay, and then go to the game the next day. And, of course, it's about 28 degrees, about what it's been here for a little while in January. It was there in November. And, I had a blast. We bought our tickets. We kind of, the spur of the moment, kind of decided, because we had been planning this for a long time, but really didn't know if we were going to have a chance to act on it. And we just kind of spur of the moment bought our tickets and on a Thursday. And on that Sunday, Aaron Rodgers breaks his collarbone against the Vikings. And, of course, the value in the tickets dropped. But we enjoyed it for what it was. We don't regret going. I was really upset, me and my brother. We were really bummed that he got hurt, because that's part of the reason that you go, to see the stars.
So unfortunate.
But it really didn't take away from the experience, because to walk around Lambeau Field and to, you know, we saw the statue of Lombardi and Curly Lambeau. They have a sports bar right across the street that opens at like 8 a.m. on game days. And so we went over there, you know, like I said, got the whole fan experience. The stadium was incredible. The whole experience, you know, the night we went to this Titletown sports bar and had some good food and stuff the night before, and, you know, just had a blast. Just everything was amazing. That the drive was rough, and the game itself was the worst part. Aaron Rodgers didn't play, and the Packers got shut out for the first time in like 10 years. Oh, but it was fun. See, that kind of experience I thoroughly enjoy.
But back to the overall conversation we were having, and I kind of want to make my point as to why. And I understand that, like, overall you'd like to be at home, but for me, I feel like when I'm watching college football, I love the home experience watching. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy why I don't. I feel like I'm missing something when I'm sitting at home and I'm watching, you know, some of these fan bases and an atmosphere. I know you're experiencing it on TV and you're in the moment with everybody else, but you just feel like being there is something special, and you're missing out on something. For me, I feel like going to an actual live Super Bowl, I'd be missing something by not being at home, because for me, that's where the magic is, being at home and watching the atmosphere around you, the people you're hanging out with, watching their reactions, being able to have all the food. It's an event, much like when we talked to Crazy Charlie yesterday on Tom's show, much like just about any sporting event in Nashville. It's not just about the game. It's every bit of about everything surrounding it, and I grew up around that so much as a kid. That's kind of what I've come to love. It's not just about, I mean, sure, the main focus is on the game afterwards, but everything you do beforehand is just as important. You're not going through the motions when you're making the food, and you're soaking all that up, because that's every bit of the experience as going to the actual game. And I feel like going to a Super Bowl, which I'd like to experience one, but going to a Super Bowl every year, you'd be missing out on that. Plus, you'd miss the commercials. So, I, you know, that to me is the big difference.
Now, here's a question. So they posed this on, I think.
I ask you questions. I'm interested. Ask me a question.
They posed this on Golic and Wingo the other day. It was, if your team is playing in the Super Bowl, like, say, for you, if the Titans were playing in the Super Bowl, would you want to watch that with, like, a big group of people, or would you prefer to sit and, like, by yourself?
It just depends. The group of people would have to be my friends and Titans fans. You know, it would have to. You guys aren't necessarily Titans fans. Jordan is, but I wouldn't mind being around you guys.
See,
because I like a little bit of an atmosphere. I want to be around people. It doesn't matter how many. It could be one, or it could be, you know, 10. But I want to be around people that want understand and are respectful of watching the game and understanding that, you know, really, if we're talking about the game, we're watching the game. You know, all the focus is on that. And I want people that, you know, understand the game. I don't just want people around just because it's a big event.
Just because it's an event. You don't want people around who are more interested in the party aspect of it than the game aspect.
Yeah, I want people that
aspect.
Understand how I feel about it, and they feel the same about the game. Maybe not the team. Maybe not necessarily Titans fans. But you, my close friends and my stepdad would probably be who I'd want around. I would, honestly, the better question for me would be, if the Titans are in the Super Bowl, because they don't go often, they've only been to one, it would be so tough to try to choose whether I would rather sit at home with a close group of my family and friends and watch that moment, or actually go, because it doesn't come around that often. Which is more important in that sense? I think I might actually, and I'm going to shock myself, because I would have picked, any other time, I would have said, man, I'll go to a Titans Super Bowl. I might actually rather sit at home and watch out with my close friends and family.
Yeah, I know that I voted for sit at home and watch it alone is what I voted for. And that ultimately won, I think, the poll. It was a Twitter poll. But you're right. I would, and see, I'm not a fan of Super Bowl parties anyway, because, like I said, most of the time people are more interested in the party aspect of it than they are in the actual game. Like for the most part, the game is on to folks, and you tune in if somebody scores or whatnot. And I would much rather sit and, like you said, watch it with people who understand what's going on, especially even if it's my team. If it was Dallas, or if it was Green Bay or Carolina, okay, or anything like that, I would choose to watch it at home with just a select group.
So who are you watching the Super Bowl with tomorrow?
I think I'm gonna end up. I'm gonna watch it at my parents' house with my wife and my brother, and basically my close family.
Your sister.
If she's there, she. I think we went out to eat last night and she didn't come.
Wow.
But I know she abandoned us. Yulb?
She's turning into a teenager.
She is. She's growing up way too fast. But, you know, she'll be driving in August.
Oh, my God.
She's already got her permit. I made a mistake last week because we were talking. I brought her up, said she was 14. She's actually 15. But in the moment, I got caught up. But anyway,
you messed up.
She'll be 16 in August. And
really
that's
quick,
just crazy.
Really quick, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I knew this question was going to come up on Twitter. We talked about it shortly yesterday. We're going to answer what is the greatest Super Bowl commercial ever, or just your favorites. Pick one or two if you can. And we'll talk about your favorite Super Bowl foods. 866-485-9867. That's how you get in. You can tell us, answer these questions for us. You can get onto the Twitter window, @TonyMacUMP, A Trip Tennis. Is it? Did you put the two? It's just one P, right? Yeah, because A T R I P Tennis is how you can get it, Aaron. And you can just go to the show Twitter and find us both in the bio @TonyMacTriplet. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And also, I'm going to put Aaron's football IQ and his football knowledge to the test when we come back. Right here, Tony Mac and the Triplets, 730, 1039, The Ump. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Bag it up. I like the way you work it. No diggity. I got to bag it up. Welcome back. Tony Mac and the Triplets. Super Bowl Saturday, one day before Super Bowl Sunday, the biggest, most televised, media-covered event you can ever ask for here that I've ever experienced. And we get to experience that tomorrow, and you get 2 weeks to prepare for this thing. So there are so many angles you can look at, the matchups, the prop bets, anything you want to do. Super Bowl allows you to do that. Well, for most people. I don't know if you guys watched the Alex Trebek Jeopardy show the other day, but I can guarantee you three people. There are at least three people that will not be watching the Super Bowl. You want to know how I know that? That's because he asked them five. This is how you knew they didn't know anything about football, first and foremost. It was, you know, the Jeopardy, they have the board, they have all the categories, and you have five questions each category. They get harder based on the money. The football category was the only category left, and it hadn't been touched. It was the only one left on the board. They were scared of this category. And then they get the first question, the $200 question. You're like, oh, wow, this is fool's gold. This is softball right now. And they're lobbing it up to you. And then you quickly realize, there's a reason they left it up there. Not only did they get all five questions wrong, they didn't even try to answer. Not one of them. So Aaron, Mr. Football IQ genius over here, maybe we should ask your brother, since he actually played football, okay? He might be a little more experienced. He might know the answers a little better than you, okay? I'm not saying I'm doubting you, but hey, this is Jeopardy. These guys didn't get them. Maybe you won't. Let's see. I'm not going to play Trebek. I'm going to read them myself. I got them pulled up here. Stop reading the screen. I read them to you. You are the challenger. I'm the host. Let's play Tony Mac Jeopardy. Your choice. do or don't name them. I love how they give them the option. You can name it, but you don't have to, which they don't. Name this play in which the quarterback runs the ball, and he can choose to pitch it to another back. Think about it. Answer.
I'm going to go, what is an option?
Are you going to be that guy who asks me? Are you going to do that? So you're right. That is correct. I need to pull up my dinger sound. My bing. Huh? But I don't have that. I should have done that. I didn't expect to do this. But all right. Question number two. One for one. It's a good start. Tom Landry perfected the shotgun formation with this team. But let me stop you right there. You better not get this one wrong.
Who are the Dallas Cowboys?
That is correct. You're not allowed to get that question wrong. You're not allowed to get that one wrong because you're a Cowboy.
I should be embarrassed if I would have missed it.
Well, at least you would have given it a shot. These guys didn't even try to answer the questions. They stood there with a blank face. And I'm going to play the last question after you answer it here in a minute. There are five. I'm going to play it because at the end, Alex Trebek didn't even give them a chance to answer it. Like, he made a comment. He was like, if you get this, I will die, and then gave the answer in the same breath. Like, he didn't even allow them a chance to answer the question. All right. Question number three. By signaling for one of these, a returner can reel in a kick without fear of getting tackled.
What is a fair catch?
Wow. Wow. This is why you guys need to continue to listen to this show. We are geniuses. We are geniuses because Aaron is 3 for 3. That is correct. You're going for $800 now. Aaron, this is big money. You feeling the pressure yet? Your hands are starting to sweat. You get a little nervous. Stop reading the questions. These penalties are simultaneous violations by the offense and the defense that cancel each other out. Now, I read this one yesterday to a listener, and he might have gotten confused. It was the only one he missed. But I'm going to read it again so you understand the question, because I don't think he quite understood it, and he got it wrong. These penalties are simultaneous violations, which means it happened at the same time, by the offense and the defense. It cancels each other out.
My only guess is what are offsetting penalties.
Correct. He guessed offsides and a false start, which I understood what he was trying to get at. He just didn't get the offsetting part. That's why I had to read it again. Continuing, this is the big one now. I might have to play. This is the audio question, so I might have to pop this one up for you. Okay, you ready? You got your headphones on. You ready to hear this? Here we go. Here is the $1,000 question for football.
As Minneapolis's U.S. Bank Stadium prepares to host Super Bowl 52, I'm looking at the Ring of Honor with names from this defensive line that took the Vikings to 4 Super Bowls.
Who are the Purple People Eaters?
5 for 5, you are a genius. Now listen to how much time Trebek does not give them to answer this question.
If you guys ring in and get this one, I will die. Who are the Purple People?
Didn't give them any time. He gave them the answer right away. He let the crowd react and laugh a little bit. Oh, it's a funny joke. Trebek's going to die. He's old. We get it. And then, boom, gave him the answer. Purple People Eaters. No faith in those guys. That's embarrassing. They didn't know what an option was. If you're a casual football fan, you kind of know the rules, but you don't know who Tom Landry is, maybe you missed that one. Sure, it's Jeopardy. You know, these guys don't watch football a lot. But a fair catch. Trebek even put his hand up in the video. He even put his hand up in the video.
And, I mean, the fair catch and the offset, and maybe not the offsetting penalties, and the Purple People Eaters, definitely, if you aren't familiar with sports nicknames, might get you. Because, I mean, you have the Purple People Eaters, the Monsters of the Midway, the Doomsday Defense, the Orange Crush. Most people aren't going to be familiar with those like maybe some of us would, but, I mean, that's a famous defensive line they were. So
I don't want to toot my own horn here. And I don't want you guys to doubt me. There might be some doubters out there, but when I watched this video yesterday, I went 5 for 5 as well. So, you know, I as hard as that is to believe, I know it was pretty tough. But let's go to another guy who I'm sure went 5 for 5. Calling in 866-485. You can join him. 866-485-9867 is how you can do that. Let's get to the guy who punched that number in. Arizona J is on the line. What's up, buddy?
Man, the only reason why I knew the Purple Field Leader question, because my brother was like 10 years older than me. Like, he used to think he was the flyest person on the planet. He used to rock these, like, purple parachute pants in the 80s. You know what I mean? And we used to go to church. Like, man, you ain't going to church with us with the purple people leaders on. You know what I mean? And he literally, you say he used to rock some purple people leaders, man, purple parachute pants. But, I mean, I watched that. I seen that thing this morning. I was like, man, how do they not know what this guy is talking about? But, you know what I mean? That's intellectual. I mean, I'm an intellectual. You know what I mean? But I still know my sports.
Yeah, absolutely. And Arizona Jay, I'm going to flip the script on you really quick because you asked us a question on Twitter. I'm going to ask you that question, okay? What is, since you want to know, and we'll get into it, we'll talk about it, we'll have to think about it for a minute, but since you thought about it enough to ask the question, what is your favorite Super Bowl commercial?
I don't know. I remember that old school commercial, like with the lady throwing the hammer at the screen. It was an old school, like, Apple commercial. I don't know if that's the greatest commercial, but that's, like, the thing I remember. There's been so many commercials. Like, really, if you're a fan of the game, you're not worried about the commercials, really. You know what I mean? You're really not worried about the commercial. But there are some funny ones that out there that you're just like, oh, my God, who thought of that? You know what I mean? That's the business I need to be in, because I think of off-the-wall type stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Arizona Jay, we appreciate your call, buddy. And just hang on, because we're going to answer that question. There are a couple Super Bowl commercials that come to mind. And actually, yesterday when I hosted Tom's show, I had Tricky Ricky from ZYP. He co-hosted with me, and he actually saw a leaked Super Bowl commercial. And he showed it to me during the break, and it's pretty great. It's an M&M commercial. And the green M&M's walking, or the red M&M's walking down the road, and I think he's talking to the brown girl M&M. And he all of a sudden turns into a human. And he's excited. He's like, I'm a human. The red M&M turned into Danny DeVito wearing an M&M shirt. That's a genius commercial. And Ricky didn't even drop the bombshell on me. He was just like, yeah, Danny DeVito is an M&M in one of the commercials. I'm like, that's perfect because he's short. That's funny. We're all going to make fun of that. Then he gets hit by a bus at the end of the commercial. Even better. Ricky didn't even tell me that he got hit by a bus. I had to watch the commercial. I was already pulled in by the fact that Danny DeVito got to play the red M&M. It was pretty awesome. Did any Super Bowl commercial pop out in your mind?
Well, like he said, you know, you're not too worried about the commercials, but they are all unique, for sure.
I'm gonna tell you right now, my wife's probably at home listening, like she always does, and she's probably screaming. She's probably like, "What do you mean we don't care about the commercials? They're my favorite part."
I know my wife is too. She's the only reason because my wife is the most anti-sports person, one of the most anti-sports people that I've ever met.
Let's be honest though, it's because of how pro sports you are.
But yes, she used to not really care, and now ever since we started dating 4.5 years ago, she's been completely turned off to sports, and I tell her that I don't blame her, but she says the commercials are the best part, obviously. Yep. But the one that sticks out in my mind is I was young. I think I was probably middle school age. I think it was the Seahawks Steelers Super Bowl. I think the Seahawks Steelers Super Bowl, and it was a Snickers commercial, and it was two guys. The commercial opens and they're both eating one side of the Snickers bar, and they're getting closer and closer. And they lock lips for a second, and one of them says, "Dude, I think we just kissed." They're like, "Quick, do something manly." And one of them, he opens his shirt and he rips out some chest hair, and he's like, "Ah!" I laugh.
I remember that commercial.
Oh, that's so hard.
I can't think of any particular that pop off my mind. We'll have to go to the break and look up some. But I remember last year John Malkovich had a few good ones. You know, the Who is John Malkovich or JohnMalkovich.com or whatever. It was already taken by another John Malkovich. And he had a couple where he was calling and trying to get it back and getting angry like John Malkovich does. Those were good. But I don't have any that pop. The one that I can think of that kind of violates personal space, like that one that was kind of funny, was the Dorito commercial where like they pull their hand out of the bag, and the one guy was like sucking on another dude's fingers to get the Dorito off of him. Those are kind of like gross but funny at the same time. Because I'm one of those people, like, and it drives my wife crazy. Like if like I dip my finger in like some icing or something, and I like to keep my hands clean, so does my wife, but if I dip my finger in some icing or something and my wife wants some, sometimes I'll put it up to her mouth and she'll take it or whatever. She does that to me, I won't do it. I refuse to eat off of anybody else's fingers.
See,
it's gross.
I'm kind of the same way. I'll sit there and, you know, I'll try to get the extra if it's Cheetos or Doritos or whatever.
I mean,
I'll try to get
it
off my
fingers,
finger.
But I won't eat it off anybody else's fingers.
See, I'm one of the ones to see what I do is I don't want to, because I always have to get up. I don't like doing that because I don't like sitting there and like putting all my fingers in my mouth trying to clean my fingers. So I just like, I have to get up and wash my hands. And I hate doing that. So what a time is, I'll get my dog to come over there and I'll be like, here you go. And I'll let him clean my fingers.
No wonder Gizmo loves you so much. Which, by the way, I'm going to be honest with you. Gizmo is a great name for a pet. Gizmo is a fantastic name for a pet. So you knocked it out of the park there. Aaron, something I've been doing all week on Tom's show, normally I get to do my Tony Mac Manouge. You know, it's my segment, and Tom will come on and talk. He'll introduce me, and then I'll come on and do a Manouge. And what it is it's on this day in sports history. Well, I've been hosting a show and running it the last few days that I didn't want to just read what happened on this day in history because, you know, they're already listening to me for 4 hours. So I decided to take a different approach, and I was letting you hear what this day in history sounded like. It was a Super Bowl edition, so if a Super Bowl happened on this day in history, I would play some of the audio for you. Well, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties today, so I couldn't get all the audio I wanted. So we'll just have to talk about the Super Bowls that happened today. And since I have somebody else in studio here with me, we can bounce off back and forth and talk about how much we remember of these Super Bowls. Three Super Bowls happened on this day in history, and all three of them were phenomenal. Starting in 2002, Super Bowl 36, Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl ever against, well, it was the Rams.
It was
right?
The Rams, the one I discussed
20
earlier.
20-17. Vinatieri. Did Vinatieri hit the game-winning field goal in all three? I feel like it was all
he
three.
Hit a game. He scored the last points, I'm pretty sure, in all of Tom Brady's first three.
Yeah.
He had the Rams game winner. The Panthers was a kind of a game winner. I think there was about 30-something seconds left.
I think it was less than. I think it was
less
like
than
eight
that.
Seconds
there
left,
was,
but yeah.
It didn't expire like it did in the
right. But he was the he decided it at the end.
Yeah, and then
three.
The Eagles one was different. I think they were up 24-14, and okay. Philadelphia scored it. I'm not sure. I don't remember much about that one other than T.O. was playing on like a, what is it, a broken leg or something,
and was dominating in that game.
Yeah,
T.O. was filthy in that game. But on this day in history, Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl. Oh, what do you remember? That was 2002. And if we're talking January or February of 2002, I was 10 years old because I wouldn't have turned 11 until the end of the year.
And I was not. No, I was 8. I was going to turn 9 later that year if it was February 2002.
I just turned back maybe 2 months before, just turned 10 years old. I don't remember much about this one. Which one was the Janet Jackson one?
That was the Carolina. That was the Panthers.
Okay, that was the one that every boy our age became a man. That's what we all remembered about that one. We all became men. So, I'm just saying. You know what I'm talking about. Go back and watch the halftime show if you don't know what I'm talking about. So, other than the fact that Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl, you don't really remember much live about that. I mean, you're 9 years old.
Ty Law had a pick six in the game. Other than that, I don't remember much of anything.
Also, on this day in sports history, 2008, another Super Bowl, one of the greatest Super Bowls we've ever gotten to watch, was the undefeated Patriots take on the New York Giants. And Eli Manning, you know, it's funny that they were the Giant. They're named the Giants, but they slayed the Giant in the game. And the David Tyree catch. And this was one of those games where I was pulling against the Patriots. And it was the last game, I think, I pulled against the Patriots in. And my God, I don't know how many more Super Bowls. I can name one other Super Bowl where I was as emotionally attached in a game as I was this one. But it's hard to find almost any sporting event where you can just, you felt it. You felt every single person's eyes were glued to the TV and were hanging on every single moment in this Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was something special. And I think it's the only Super Bowl in history where Vegas lost money. Was the David Tyree and Giants Super Bowl. And I remember so, because I was pulling so hard for the Giants in that game, I remember so many details about it. It was just an amazing game. You saw a little bit of everything. And
so you remember every little detail about that game.
Not every detail, but I remember.
Well, I didn't mean like that. I said that to make a point. Did Eli Manning deserve Super Bowl MVP?
I think he did.
I think you can name anybody on that defense and give it to him.
I think you could have as well.
I think you should have.
I think the defense was such a team effort that you couldn't really give it to one guy.
I know Strahan was going out, though, so you could have given it to him as one of those gifts. But
Tuck, Umanura, all those guys were just going after it.
I remember the David Tyree catch and everything about it, but if you remember the entire season the Patriots was having and how the records Tom Brady was breaking, I mean, I know a lot of them have been broken by Peyton Manning now, but what he was doing was absolutely unheard of. He had Randy Moss doing ridiculous things. For this Giants team to hold them to 14 points is something that's going to go overlooked because of the David Tyree catch, which is one of the greatest catches in Super Bowl history. And because of the circumstance, I think it propels it to the greatest. In terms of difficulty, I think you can – in terms of difficulty and luck, I think you can put a couple other ones up there in that category. Julian Edelman's from a year ago is definitely top two, top three with the difficulty and how close it was to not being a catch. And you had curses in Super Bowl 49. That was another one where it popped up and that put them in position to possibly win the game.
And then I'm pretty sure that Lynn Swann had a really juggling one against Dallas, I think, way back when. We tend to forget some of those old ones.
David Tyree one's going to be more important just because of the circumstance it was in, and knocking off the undefeated Patriots, which is understandable. But holding this team to 14 points is insane.
And the opening drive lasted about 9 minutes, resulted in a field goal. So they stayed on the field for a long time, and the Giants just sold out to stop the pass, and they got the pressure with four guys, and they sacked Brady five, six, seven times in the game, and the it wasn't just the pure number of sacks; it was the number of hurries and hits that they put on him in that game as well that got him. And I was reading, it said Brady, of course, he still says that this game haunts him to this day, and he said what really gets him is they get the ball back with 30 seconds, however much time is left, under a minute, and they snap it back, and he throws it deep to Randy Moss. He gets hit as he throws it and just puts it on a dime, but a defender, I cannot remember the defender's name, came from halfway across the field to knock it away.
I was just about to mention that. Tom Brady, and that's something else that goes lost, too. Tom Brady puts that ball, and it was a really deep ball as well.
It was.
Getting hit on the money. You're exactly right about that. I'm glad somebody who's pulling so hard against the Giants actually, you know, remembers that, because me and my old roommate Jordan, we watched that game a couple times, and we saw the replay, and we're like, holy crap, that should have been a catch. But we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our thoughts on that game, and we'll bring up the other Super Bowl that happened on this day in sports history. And then we'll wrap up the first hour as well. It doesn't happen, without a break. It's Tony Mack and the Triplett, 730, 1039, The Ump. Stay tuned.
Sports Radio 730 and 1039, The Ump, WUMP.
Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplett, 730, 1039, The Ump. Super Bowl Saturday, one day before Super Bowl 52. And because we're carrying the game here on The Ump, I'm reveling in the fact that we can say Super Bowl over and over and over and over and over again, because everybody else on these other stations, they're not allowed to say it. They have to say the big game because of, copyright purposes and stuff like that. We're carrying the game. So Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl happens tomorrow. You can hear the coverage starting at 1 o'clock, 1 or 1:30, right here on The Ump. And don't get mad at me if you tune in at 1:30 and it started at 1. You're like, I missed 30 minutes of Super Bowl coverage. It's 4 hours worth of coverage, guys. You're going to get plenty of it if you haven't been watching it for 2 weeks anyway. So check that out right here on The Ump. Aaron, we left off. Final thought, Super Bowl 42, the David Tyree Super Bowl. The Giants, the New York Giants, slayed the actual Giants this day, 10 years ago now. It's been 10 years. Final thoughts on that game. Wrap it up real quick so we can get to the last Super Bowl to happen on this day in history.
I think it was easy. It was the greatest upset in NFL history, I think. And it was something that is one of those that if you watched it, you'll remember it for forever.
Well, I think that some older football fans would say that
would say that they say the Jets and the Colts.
Jets and the Colts.
I think the spread. I don't know what game the spread was larger on. I think just the. And in that game, the Jets dominated the Colts really.
Yeah. So this game, I think the Patriots were favored by what, like 9?
It was nine or ten or something.
It was something like that. But I think the Baltimore Colts one was the Jets beating the Colts is still considered as the greatest upset. But when we get older. This will be remembered more than that one because, you know, we saw – they're kind of driving the narrative because they saw both games. We, you know, didn't. We saw this one. So we'll be driving the narrative when we get older. The other Super Bowl that happened on this day in 2013, it's been 5 years, Super Bowl 47. The Baltimore Ravens beat the San Francisco 49ers 34-31. Now, I was watching a highlight of this before, and this is one of my favorite Super Bowls. This is up there with, I think, Giants – Patriots is number one as far as entertainment and everything. It'd be hard to rank them now because of Super Bowl 49 was really good. I enjoyed that one a lot. But Giants-Patriots was amazing. For me, my number two favorite Super Bowl to watch was Pittsburgh and Arizona. That game was incredible. This one goes right up there with it. I mean, I think if Baltimore doesn't have that kickoff return, Jacoby Jones doesn't have that kickoff return right before the lights went out, I think we see a different dynamic going into the fourth quarter. San Francisco still gets hot after the lights go out. They would have the lead going into the fourth quarter instead of being down just a couple of points. Totally different dynamic in this one. But, you know, the most amazing thing, and I brought this up to you during the break, is I forgot, I've watched the Super Bowl a few times, but I keep forgetting how stacked the 49ers were. I mean, they had Kaepernick, who was unstoppable. He got so hot in the playoffs. They had Frank Gore, of course. They had Vernon Davis on. They had Vernon Davis out there. They had Randy Moss. I mean, we all know that they had Michael Crabtree, but even Randy Moss was on that team. I mean, how incredible was that game?
It was one of my favorites, and it was so back and forth. A lot of interesting things happened. A lot of storylines. The 49ers were kind of just rolling through the playoffs. They beat the Falcons in a good NFC Championship game. The Ravens upset the Patriots, but it was a great game. I mean,
it was incredible,
right down to the wire.
Oh, well, so far I think people would agree that it's been a pretty good show so far. We got about another hour, about 45 minutes left for you here on Tony Mac and the Triplet. We'll get into some SEC hoops, and we'll have Super Bowl predictions for you as well. None of that happens without a break. We'll see you at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. Tony Mac and the Triplet, 7:30, 103.9 The Yomp. Stay tuned, everybody.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins! Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplet.
Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet, 7:30, 103.9 The Ump. Hour number two here in the wonderful Ump Studios, Athens, Alabama. Aaron and I talked at length Super Bowls past. We will be giving you guys some Super Bowl predictions. Remember, the show ends at 10:45 today, not 11. We're over 15 minutes early because we're going to get into Alabama basketball pregame as they head into Gainesville today to take on the number 23 ranked Florida Gators. Speaking of college hoops, let's jump into that. I know, Aaron, you've got a few things you want to bring up about college basketball, and it's most likely going to be Auburn related. And it honestly, it's not because you're an Auburn fan, and I think people would be okay with that around this area, but it might just have to do with the fact that Auburn's the class of the SEC. Now, I asked Josh Ward yesterday, our SEC insider, and he said it was a good question. And my question to him was, I know Auburn's got the SEC lead right now. They're like 8-1 in conference, and there's like three teams behind them tied for second at 6-3 in the conference, and Alabama's just behind them at 5-4. My question was, down the stretch here, as we're 9 games in, so there's 9 more conference games. Down the second half of the conference schedule, what are we going to see? Are we going to see Auburn pull away and everybody else fall in line, Tennessee, Florida, and Kentucky, and Alabama figure out those spots in the seeds? Or what team, if any, is going to challenge Auburn for that top spot in the SEC?
Well, Auburn took down Tennessee in Knoxville, which is one of their best. I think it's probably their best win.
Tennessee is still playing a lot better and getting better.
And they are playing better. Kentucky's playing better since that. They beat West Virginia, and then they came back and beat Vanderbilt. I know Vanderbilt is not very good, but they were playing at home, I believe, against Kentucky. And then, of course, Florida, of course, is playing very good basketball. But Auburn still has to go to Florida to play the Gators. And I'm not sure if they go to Rupp or not. Do they?
They do not.
It's a tough schedule, though.
I mean, this is kind of the end of their cupcake schedule. And if they win this one, it's impressive because Bruce Pearl said, we're not trying to overlook anybody. And this is kind of that Alabama test for them. Alabama kind of plays down to their level of opponent. Auburn has two opportunities to see if they're going to do that and slip up. And so far, they didn't. They passed the first test against Ole Miss in Oxford. I know Ole Miss isn't nothing to sleep on when you go to the Pavilion, and they passed that test. Now, the reason why I think they get over the Vanderbilt hump, Aaron, Vanderbilt's really not that good of a team. But Auburn hasn't beaten Vanderbilt since 2007 in basketball. It's been 13 games, I believe.
It always feels like Auburn goes to Nashville to play Vanderbilt, and that is a tough play. That is such a tough place to play. And Auburn, I used to feel like they always could get beat by like 30 when they would go to Vanderbilt to play. So I'm really glad they're coming here this time just because I don't want to have to go play them at home because they're tough to beat at home. They're not a very good basketball team, but they play well at home. And the SEC is they don't have a dominant team, but I feel like they're as well rounded as they've been in several years.
This is the best SEC conference in basketball I've ever seen.
It's very deep. There's a lot of quality teams, a lot of quality players, quality coaches. So nothing is an easy give me win in the SEC, which is good and bad for Alabama. If you're talking about Alabama basketball, they're sitting there at 14-8 right now. A lot of people think that it'll only take about 18 wins with their strength of schedule to get in the tournament. And right now, with Auburn being their best win, Alabama's got to beat a team of substance down the stretch in the SEC that the committee and that Lenardi and those kind of – I know Lenardi doesn't pick the teams, but he's usually pretty accurate. They've got to beat some team of substance like today. I think if they win today, I think they're in. And they're going to have to win, of course. I think they're going to have to win at least one or two in the SEC tournament.
Yeah.
But they need to win. Alabama, it's almost a must, especially because of the letdown. They had a big win over Oklahoma, and then they went right back home and let down against Missouri.
Ultimately, do you think Alabama gets in?
I think they do. I think they find enough to get in.
But it'll be like an eight or nine seed, though. They'll get in low.
Yeah, it'll be lower, and I think it could, if they end up struggling, not getting a big win here at the end of the season and then having to make that last push in the SEC tournament, they could end up as one of those first four games.
I think I actually told you this last week on the show before they played Oklahoma, and I know I said it on Tom's show last week because I had to cover it for him last Friday, and it's that I think Alabama gets in the tournament, and I don't think they decide that they get into the tournament until the SEC tournament. I think Alabama's going to have to do something in the SEC tournament, which they did last year. They made it to the semifinals, I believe, against Kentucky. Was that the semis or the finals?
It was the semis because they upset South Carolina, who, of course, got into the tournament as a 7 seed and went all the way to the Final Four.
So, and I think that's how Alabama's going to do it again. They're going to get in the SEC tournament, have to make some waves, but it'll be a little easier this year once they win a couple games. They're going to look, say, okay, tournament format, they won a couple, look at the talent they have, put them in the tournament. But the most impressive thing looking at these schedules right now for me is looking at Auburn's schedule. They play Vandy today. If they get over this next three-game stretch, you're going to get to see who Auburn is and what they are, because you're not.
And really, it's really the next about five games because Texas A&M is good, Georgia on the road, then they get Kentucky at South Carolina, Alabama, and Florida all right there. And it's tough. Then Arkansas and South Carolina again. This is the toughest stretch that Auburn's going to go through.
Right, and here's what all I mean season. By that. Like, you're going to get to see who they are because these are games that they're going to have to get up and play for. They're all tough games. They're not these letdown games. Let's see if Auburn can get over this game, even though it's kind of a trap game. You're not going to get those games in these next five games. It's going to be, who is this Auburn team? This stretch will determine, in my opinion, how I look at them going into the tournament because they're an undersized team. They're without two of their three best players. But that doesn't – I mean, they're doing things. You name a way to win a game, they do it. They were known for a long time this season, coming from behind in the second half and making a run. They're able to slow you down and play an ugly game and win an ugly game like they did against Ole Miss. I know it was kind of higher scoring, 79-70, but that was an ugly game. Neither team shot particularly well, and they grinded that one out. They can do the high-flying stuff, and it's really impressive to see this team. Now, I want to see how they do in a tough stretch, not just one or two tough games in a row. I want to see how they do in a tough stretch, and that will determine how far I think they go in the tournament, and I really think Auburn can make some waves.
One thing, I know that they're missing Austin Wiley and Daniel Purifoy, and two of the three best players that you would have looked at preseason, but right now, Auburn is playing such great team basketball. They have all year. They've had guys step up when they've needed them to. And they just play. They have a lot of different guys that on a different night can have a big night and Ben beat you. I mean, Mustafa Heron, Jared Harper, Bryce Brown are the three that come to mind. And it's an experience. And really, I mean, Auburn is so young, but they have all the guys played significantly a year ago, and they're all experienced. They've all been in big games from last year, and it's all kind of come together, and they've got new guys who have stepped up. They are undersized, but they have guys that fight for rebounds. They have guys that block shots. They shoot it well from beyond the arc. So they're playing great team basketball, and it's going to be put to the test, though, coming up after, especially if they get by Vanderbilt today. I mean, they get Texas A&M at home, then they go to Georgia, get Kentucky at home, go to South Carolina, get Alabama at home, go to that. When they go to Florida, that is what's really – that's really going to be the tough game, because Auburn is very good at home. They have a – what they've done with the basketball at Auburn Arena is amazing. They now have one of the best home courts in the SEC. It's just tough to play there. So going on the road, though, is what's really going to – you're right. This is the home stretch. We're going to find out what kind of team they are going to be going down the stretch.
And, look, I don't mean that in a way like I'm uncertain on Auburn. And I think I've been very clear on this program and during my Tony Mac minutes I get throughout the week in my little opinion piece that I put out this week was I got a direct comparison earlier in the week. I watched Oklahoma, my favorite team, play Baylor on the exact same time that Auburn was playing Ole Miss. I flipped back and forth between these games, and I got a good look as to who and what my favorite team is like compared to what I want them to be like. This Auburn basketball team, throw out all the other things the adversity Auburn has to overcome with being an undersized team. I mean, Anthony McLemore is, what, like a 6'7 center? And, I mean, they're undersized and they're gritty. DeSean Murray, I talk about him all the time, 6'7 or 6'3 power forward. He had 10 rebounds the other night. He has 7 boards a game. This team, like you mentioned, they work so well together. 4 of the 5 starters were in double digits in scoring, and then you had one who had 7 assists, DeSean Murray with 10 rebounds. They all work together, as opposed to Oklahoma, who's got the flashy point guard that everybody's still high on because Trae Young is so awesome. Well, let me tell you something about the way they play basketball compared to how Auburn plays. It's the Trae Young show, and that's what got Trae Young to Oklahoma first and foremost. I know he went to high school 3 miles away from Norman. He went to Norman North High School. But what got him there was Lon Kruger. The selling point was if you come to Oklahoma, something Coach Cal couldn't promise and Bill Self couldn't promise. It was if you come to Oklahoma, you do what you want to do. This is the Trae Young show. And what's awesome about Trae Young is that he's not just the scorer. And I know Buddy Hield was a scorer and he had a lot of scorers around him. But Trae Young has impeccable vision. His vision is amazing. What he can do with the basketball. I mean, Steph Curry in college was not the Steph Curry in the NBA. But Trae Young in college is doing a lot of the things Steph Curry is doing in the NBA. That's the impact Steph Curry's had on the college game right now and younger kids. But he's doing some incredible things. But here's the problem. Being the guy who's going to score and get you the ball, asked to do way too much. And it's everybody's fault. It's Lon Kruger's fault because he told Trae Young that's what he gets to do. And it's Trae Young's fault. Because Trae Young not only has to score, but he has to get you the ball. And how he gets you the ball, he is supposed to get you open. He has all the responsibility. Nobody else is supposed to work their way open. If you don't believe me, watch them play basketball. Go back and watch the Alabama game. Nobody moves without the ball. Yet, if somebody else comes down the court with the basketball, They're not setting up the offense and getting people to move around. They're finding a way for Trae Young to come out of a couple screens in the double team to get the basketball, and then everybody resets, and they go their own way. They set some screens for him, and then one guy will stand down low, and if the double team happens to come to Trae Young, he'll dish it to that guy. But they don't move without the ball. They don't work themselves open. And then I flipped over to and they don't play defense, and that's why it was like a 98-97 game against Baylor. And then I flip over to watch the Auburn game against Ole Miss. And you got, and the reason why it's so hard to double team people on that team is everybody's moving. You lose track of your guys. Auburn, Oklahoma's is the defense that loses track of where their guys are. Auburn is the team that makes you lose track of where their guys are because everybody is a threat. Everybody is moving without the ball. Everybody trusts that the other parts are working well enough. And that's why their size doesn't matter. That's why when they play Alabama again in Auburn Arena with Colin Sexton at full strength, they're going to beat them. Auburn is a really good basketball. They're talented, and they're really well coached.
They are. They are. What Bruce Pearl has done has just been unbelievable. It's taken a little while, but we knew it would. But it's finally coming together. When they played Alabama the first time, which is not a bad loss for Auburn by any means, Alabama's a very talented team. They did do it without Colin Sexton, but it had to do with a lot. Auburn didn't have their best game. They had an off night. Coleman's a tough place to play, and John Petty hit 8 threes. And
Auburn still had a chance.
And they did. They did. They battled back. But Alabama's got a lot of talent. But the one that where Alabama is going to struggle when they come to Auburn is – and where they've struggled really when they don't win is, and this sounds obvious, but really when you get right down to it, this is an issue. They can't score. They have trouble scoring points, and they have for the last few years. And other than Colin Sexton, there's not a lot of consistent scores on the floor.
I agree with you, and I'll say this about Alabama, and I hate to say this because I love Avery Johnson, but I think the issue right now with them is partially due to their coaching. I'm going to go back to the Bruce Pearl situation really quick. I think it's funny that Bruce Pearl is coaching like a coach of the year right now, and he still might be without a job next year because he refuses to talk to the Auburn president about the investigation. But on the other note, Alabama's issue is what I think is Avery Johnson the last couple of years with Alabama has done an amazing job. He has been a great coach putting them in the positions they've been in. That's because they didn't quite have the talent they have this year, so the players have no choice but to buy into the system that Avery Johnson's putting out there. We're going to play team ball. This is how we're going to work things around. But this year, I think Avery Johnson has to find his perfect medium. And we're deep into the season, and he hasn't done it yet. But I think this season's a learning experience for him because now he's got the talent of John Petty, and he's got the five-star talent of Colin Sexton there. And he's having an issue with, I need you guys to buy into my system. At the same time, Colin Sexton's talent, he wants the ball. He wants to be the driving force of everything. And he can't find that perfect medium. Late in the game, when you're talking about nobody, they can't find a way to score. You want to know why that is? Late in the game, Colin Sexton is much like any other five-star talent. They want the ball. It's their show at the end of the game. And everybody else is doing what they can to make sure he gets the opportunity to get to the goal. It's him scoring first. And everybody else is kind of standing around waiting for their opportunity. They're not making their opportunity. They're not getting themselves open and making themselves a part of the offense because it's supposed to be the Colin Sexton show late. And I don't think Avery Johnson's able to find a perfect medium yet. I mean, Colin, I know you're the guy, but winning's more important here. And they haven't found that perfect medium. So I honestly do think that Avery's got to do a better job.
Yeah, and you can see the kind of game they can play when they played like they did against Oklahoma, when they played a very well-rounded game defensively, offensively, across the board. They've got to find where they can do that on a consistent basis. And they need, like I said, they need to do it today against Florida, but I'm hoping that what Auburn can do, because if you're looking at Auburn, shifting gears back to them, and they're projected right now as a number 2 seed in ESPN by Lenardi and on by CBS and by Sports Illustrated, I'll have them a projected number 2 seed, which is just unfathomable with what I thought going into the preseason. But people are like, well, their strength of schedule is not very good. Yeah, they're ranked 65th in strength of schedule. It's not very good, but their strength of record is all the way up at number 6, and their RPI is 6th, and they're 15th in the Basketball Power Index. I mean, of course, 11th in the AP, 13th in the coaches. They can score the ball, and they're 10th in the nation in points per game. It's really hard to believe, but the strength of record, I think, is what's really helping them right now, being all the way up at 6 in the strength of record.
RPI
and all that.
You know the people that are arguing that, oh, well, their strength of schedule, this and that. You know who those people are? People that haven't watched them play. Because if you watch them play, it doesn't matter who they're playing. Watch what they're able to do and understand the story behind this Auburn team. They're really good, man. And this stretch is really going to determine. I think it's a little far-fetched to think they can be a one seed, but because of how tough the road is ahead. But obviously,
they'd have to win out to be a one seed.
If they go 8-1 again, like they're 8-1 halfway through conference play, if they go 8-1 the second half, they're a one seed.
I think they drop
16-2 in conference. If they go 8-1 again, if they do, I'm not saying they will, but if they do, they're a one seed, right?
It'd be hard not to. They'd put them at 4 losses. I think they'd have to. They'd probably have to win the SEC tournament.
If they go 8-1 again,
yeah, it would have put them at 3 losses. They'd probably have to run through the SEC tournament, at least get to the finals to be a one seed. But that is,
I think best case scenario for Auburn is 2 at max, 2 or 3 seed is where they're going to be.
Yeah,
and it's deserving, and I can't wait to. I'm so excited to watch them in the tournament.
And looking at this last stretch, I think they're going to lose 2 of these games. I think they beat Kentucky or Florida. I don't think they win both those games. I think they win one of those, and I think they slip up either on the road against Georgia or on the road against South Carolina.
I think they're very fortunate that they get to play Kentucky at Auburn. I think if they run into Kentucky, Kentucky's one of those teams in the SEC tournament that they could beat them on a neutral floor in, where is it this year, Missouri?
It's in St. Louis. Which irritates me because that makes no sense.
I think Florida's overrated. I think Alabama's going to beat them today just because of the number by Florida. Alabama gets up to play teams with those numbers next to their name. I think Alabama knocks Florida off in Gainesville today, and I think Auburn will whoop them too. I think it'll be a closer game because, you know, Auburn will be the favorite, and Auburn will have the target on their back. But I can see Auburn winning that. I'm not sold on Florida. I don't think they're as good as people say. I mean, people keep continuing to say Florida's a very good team. And I know they got, what, Chioza or whatever his name
Chioza.
Is. He's been there for however long now. I feel like it's been a lot longer than what it is. But he's been very good. But Auburn's a better basketball team. They're the better team. It's just whether it has nothing to do with what you're going to do against them. It has nothing to do with what Alabama did. I mean, Petty hit those 8 threes. But honestly, it wouldn't have mattered if Auburn would have hit their average on free throws. That was Alabama is that bad of a free throw shooting team. What they did against Auburn was about their average, 60-something%. Auburn is better than that at the free throw line, and they hit around the 60-something% in that game. Auburn being off their game is what lost in that game. It was nothing really particular that Alabama did. I know Petty hit all those threes, but if Auburn's on their average, they win that game. Florida's going to be the same way. Florida can have a great game, but it's going to be up to whether Auburn does or not. If Auburn's not on their game, Florida can win because of Auburn having an off day, not because what Florida does and being a better team.
I think Auburn plays probably the best overall team basketball in the SEC.
Maybe in the country. I've watched a lot of basketball, and it's the DeAndre Ayton show. It's Marvin Bagley out there. Duke does spread it around a little bit, but Auburn has all the options. Like I mentioned, 10 guys in double digits the other day. I mean, defensively, you can spread the floor and move the ball on the offensive side, but you don't have a lot of teams that have a bunch of scorers. Auburn does.
They remind me a lot of the Michigan team last year that made a run in the NCAA tournament. A little undersized, but they played great defensive. They played great team basketball. They shot it well. They were a good 3-point shooting team. And Michigan made it all the way to the Sweet 16. They're going to need Jared Harper to step up because what wins games in the NCAA tournament is point guard play. And Michigan, of course, last year had Derek Walton. But they remind me a lot of that team who Michigan, of course, came on late and Auburn is coming on through this season. But just great team basketball, a little undersized. They shoot it well. So we'll see what happens. But this stretch is going to be tough. But Bruce Pearl is a great coach. And this team has shown resiliency all year. They responded after the loss to Alabama. They go down at half a lot and come back roaring in the second half. They respond. So I think that if they do slip up in this stretch, that they'll be able to respond.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have a short segment for you to make the last segment a little longer before we get to our Super Bowl predictions. We'll discuss who we think if Auburn's going to win today and if Alabama is going to win in Gainesville, which I already gave you that pick, but we'll discuss it a little more. Coming up next, Tony Mack and the Triplets, 730, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet. Talking a little SEC hoop action going on here. You know, I know we're stuck in the middle of Alabama-Auburn country, and Alabama's intriguing. They've got the talent, and they're just really not doing much with it. It's hard to see, you know, where they're going, and that's a storyline. What Auburn's doing is an incredible storyline. But you know who gets lost here? in this conversation, Aaron, and they're a very good team in their own right, playing above expectation. Auburn was projected to finish really low in the SEC, and so was Tennessee. And they're playing lights out, too, and they host Ole Miss today, so I don't expect anything less than Tennessee to take this one home, too. What about the job Rick Barnes is doing? Remember when Bruce Pearl got hired, Avery Johnson got hired, Rick Barnes got hired, and we talked about the coaches in the SEC. Now, I mean, the SEC has the coaches now. Rick Barnes took Texas to 16 straight tournaments. Bruce Pearl had Tennessee ranked number one at one time. Avery Johnson was the NBA Coach of the Year, took the Dallas Mavericks to the finals. Look at what the SEC has, and in the last couple of years, they still haven't been up to expectation. Remember when we kept saying, well, wait, these guys, this is the turning point of the SEC? We're here now, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Finally, I mean, the SEC has some great head coaches now, especially, I mean, yeah, you're right about Rick Barnes, which I thought was a good hire for them. Bruce Pearl, I mean, don't forget about Ben Howland at Mississippi State,
don't
which is a good
about,
hire.
I mean, Frank Martin took South
Frank
Carolina,
Martin took
to,
South
the,
Carolina the to the Final Four. It really did. It flipped a page in the SEC, and we've got some really good coaches. Some still trying to figure things out at their particular, at their specific programs. But like we've said earlier, this is the best the SEC's been from top to bottom as far as solid coaches, and not only solid coaches but solid teams.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have all the top 10. I mean, Kentucky's not where they typically are. You don't have them in the top 10 or anything right now, or any SEC team in the top 10 yet, with Auburn sitting at 11. But that doesn't matter. Top to bottom, this is a very deep and well-rounded conference.
It is, and there's no easy win. No such thing as an easy win in the SEC this year.
No, absolutely not. I mean, unless maybe when you host Ole Miss. I mean, Ole Miss is a different monster at home. But and Vanderbilt, I thought you could put in that category until they went into Rupp the other day. And what a comeback by Kentucky. I mean, the atmosphere in that game was incredible, and I really thought Willis was going to knock down that three for Vanderbilt. He had the perfect pump fake and put it up and went just off the front of the rim. But incredibly resilient comeback for the Wildcats at home, who hadn't led since early in the first half, and they take their first lead in overtime. They came back to force overtime. Vandy really controlled that game. So Vandy's still really not an easy out, even though their record's not all that great. So Auburn still has a tough test. Auburn has that mental block on Vandy. They haven't beat them since 2007. Aaron, do they host Vandy today and take them down? Do they finally get over that hump? I mean, this would be the year, right?
It would be. And I think they will at home. They don't have to go to Memorial to play them. So that's a different place. That's a different kind of place to play. It's nuts. But
what would you think? I've got the line pulled up, but I scrolled down so you couldn't see it. What do you think the line on this game is, if you haven't looked at it already?
I don't know. I'd go Auburn by single digits. I'd say six.
Auburn's favored by 11.5.
Oh my goodness, that's too close for comfort for me. I think Vanderbilt's going to play them tough. They can shoot it. Riley LeChance can really shoot it. They play hard, but I think Auburn's going to play good. I think they're going to play good team basketball. This is the year where they're kind of shaking some demons out. You know, hadn't been in the tournament since 2003, by far the longest drought in the SEC. I think the most recent, the second longest is Mississippi State since 2009. So by far the longest, and I think they're just kind of continuing to break down some walls. I think they get a big win today. I think it's close for a half, and then I think second half Auburn really kind of blows the roof off and plays a good second half.
They cover.
I do think they'll cover, but initially I did not expect it to be that high.
So Kentucky, Missouri is another one here. Missouri hosting Kentucky, haven't had a good win against Alabama. Now I know you can say where Alabama's wins and losses are good wins and bad losses. But what about the people playing Alabama? Was Missouri's win over Alabama the other day a good win?
With the talent Alabama has, I would say it is a good win.
I would too. I'd go that way too.
And especially on the road in a tough environment. Yep. And Alabama was coming off that win over Oklahoma. I'd say it's a good win.
I'm still going to call BS on the tough environment, though. Coleman Coliseum has only showed me something in the Alabama-Oklahoma game. They got up because Trey Young and everybody came to town. It was a great crowd, don't get me wrong. But overall, the season, completely underwhelming. The Auburn game, that should have been the Oklahoma-Alabama atmosphere when they played Auburn early in the season and they missed their chance. They got lucky and won the game, but that crowd is underwhelming. You've got the talent and everything. I get that you're a football school and you got to have a ranking for us to root for you, whatever. That crowd, overall, that crowd's underwhelming for me. So I wouldn't consider that a tough environment.
Unless, it has been. Unless, it has been in the past. It has been in the past for sure. I remember back from the last time Auburn made the NIT and had a good team. They went to Coleman like the last game of the season, and they got a win, but it was a grinded out game, and the crowd was really tough. And when they want to be there, they bring a good home crowd.
When they want to be sure, but go back and watch Missouri game the other night. That was not a tough crowd. That crowd was. We have our friend Jordan there. He was there. I can promise you, he'll tell you that wasn't a good crowd.
And Missouri had a lot to do with it. They kind of quieted it early. They got up and they kind of stayed ahead. For the game.
Even when Alabama came back right before the half, they hit almost a buzzer beater to bring it within two. It got okay in there, but it wasn't as loud as it should have been for a team with all the talent. So it's just underwhelming for me. I'm not sold on Coleman Coliseum this year, but Missouri has another big one today. They're hosting Kentucky. Kentucky's coming off a very emotionally draining win at home against Vandy. Missouri's a 1.5, or it just went up. It went up half a point while we were talking. Missouri is now a 2-point favorite at home in Columbia at the Mizzou Arena against the Wildcats. Do you think Missouri can kind of keep rolling based on Kentucky's kind of emotionally draining game the other day?
Kentucky, I think they're finally kind of growing up, these young guys. It's taken a little bit longer this year than it normally does for Calipari. But I think this is a close game, but I think Kentucky's talent takes over kind of at the end to win a very close game. On
Alabama,
the road.
Florida 7.5-point favorite in Gainesville. Do the Crimson Tide go in there and knock off Florida?
I'm going to take Florida, but it's going to be a lot closer than 7.5. I think this is a game where Alabama plays well at the beginning, all the way through, and then with about 5 minutes to go, they start making some mistakes. Florida gets back into it, and a game where Alabama really outplays Florida at the end, but ends up losing it. I'm going to take Florida. In a very close game.
I'm taking Alabama, mainly because Alabama's back's against the wall, number one, but their back's against the wall against a team that's supposed to beat them. And that's when they play their best. That's when the talent shows up, and that's when they get up to play. So I'm going to go with Alabama in this one.
It would not shock me at all if Alabama won this game.
I feel fairly confident that Alabama's going to go in there and beat Florida, so they shouldn't have a problem there, in my opinion. I really do think they win that game. Finally, before we take a break here and get into our Super Bowl predictions, Tennessee hosting Ole Miss today. Tennessee, a 10-point favorite at home. Any problems there for the Volunteers?
Not really any. I like Tennessee. Tennessee's getting better and better with each game. And Ole Miss, not a great team, so this will be tough for them.
And they're not at home. The Pavilion's kind of been the equalizer in the SEC Conference for Ole Miss, and they weren't able to capitalize on that against Auburn the other day. I think Tennessee in Knoxville, in Thompson Bowling Arena, is that what it is? I believe that's what it's called. I'm going Tennessee, and 10 points, maybe. At home, give me Tennessee, and I'll let you have the points. I think Tennessee covers that one as well. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, last segment of the show, Super Bowl predictions. Aaron, I'm going to need a winner. I'm going to need a score because we have to do the over-under. As of yesterday, was 48.5 points. Patriots were favored by 4.5. So that's where we're going to go based off of what I had pulled up yesterday for the show. 48.5 over under, 4.5 points. Patriots, Tony Mack on the Triplet. 7:30, 103.9 The Ump. Stay tuned, everybody. Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplets, 7:30, 103.9 The Ump, the last live local segment here on The Ump that you will hear before the Super Bowl tomorrow afternoon. Coverage starts, I believe, at 1. Actually, I think it starts at 1:30, but tune in at 1 o'clock just in case if you want to catch all 4 hours of Super Bowl coverage right here, Super Bowl pregame before the Super Bowl. Aaron, it is that time. We've been saving it. We talked about the whole first hour. We talked about the Super Bowl, everything surrounding the Super Bowl. It is now time to discuss the game at length. We got about 6 minutes here. I'm going to need your description of what happens in the game, your final score, and your winner. Ready, go.
I think the Eagles had the defense to stay in this game, and I think that history tells us anything, the Patriots aren't going to blow out anybody in a Super Bowl. They haven't yet, and I think it's going to be a good game. Nick Foles is going to be the key. Now, we've seen really good things from Nick Foles. He's had, what felt like 30 touchdowns to just two interceptions just a few years ago. He's been either good or he's gotten better each time he stepped out there, had a fantastic NFC Championship game against Minnesota. So I think that he does enough to keep them in it. Now the key is, will they be able to run the football with some success? Their offensive game plan, and Doug Peterson, of course, coming from Andy Reid's system, is going to, I think he's going to call a good game. He's going to have to if they're going to want to win. And like I said, I think the Eagles have a defense to keep it around, but I think that this game's going to be – I've got the game a little bit higher scoring probably than some people would think, but, I mean, last year it ended up being 34-28 final score. I'm going to go very similar. I think that the edge is just going to go to Tom Brady and the Patriots because they've done it. They've been there, done that. They've done it. They've won it just about every way you can imagine. They do it in all sorts of ways. I think they're just going to be too good. I think the experience at quarterback, obviously, the experience as the head coach, just the been there, just this mentality that they've got, business as usual kind of thing. I think Brady gets his sixth Super Bowl in eight tries, and Belichick gets another one as well. I like New England 32-26. A little bit odd score, but if you look back in recent years, odd things have happened because even the Patriots ended up with 28 points last year, but they got there in 28 points going into overtime, but they got there in an odd way with several field goals, went for two a couple times. Of course, you had the safety at the beginning of Super Bowl 48. A little bit of an odd score.
They won a Super Bowl like 32-29 once. You know,
odd score. I think they're down two late under five to go, and Brady leads a big drive, and they are able to hold off the Eagles one last time. So I got New England, and I got the over on the score. I think it goes, 48.5 or something.
And
I got it over.
You got it in the 50s, 60s.
And I think that the Patriots cover with that score, that spread. But it's a good game. But I just – like I said, I think Foles can do enough to – the defense and Foles can potentially do enough to win this game, but the fact that they can and will they do it is still in question. So I'm going to take New England in this game, a good game, but Patriots 32, Eagles 26. That's my prediction for the game.
Eagles are very capable of winning this game. They have all the tools like you mentioned, but it's the Patriots that they have to play, and it's unfortunate for them because – other than beating the Giants, name me a way the Patriots haven't won a Super Bowl with Brady and Belichick. I mean, the last two, they've come from behind double digits in the fourth quarter. Last year was spectacular because they were down, 28-9 in the fourth quarter?
I think so. I think it was 28-9.
It was 28-3. I know the deficit, but like I think going to
or
the fourth
quarter. Or was it 28-11? Was it 28-11?
I think it was 28. At one point, it was 28-9 and then 28-3. I don't think it was ever 28-11.
I'm just trying to remember when they started going for two.
It was 28-9 and then 28-12, I think, but I don't think it was ever 11.
Okay.
But the Patriots, they had to come from behind last year in record-breaking fashion. Super Bowl 49, they were down 10 points going into the fourth quarter, came back and won that one. Carolina, that was one of the wackiest fourth quarters you've ever seen. Crazy things happen in the fourth quarter against the Patriots. I don't think they blow them out. I think they do cover by more than 4.5. I think the final score is going to be 27-21, 6 points. I think the Patriots are down 21-20, score a touchdown, and then the Eagles go down, can't get it. Patriots run the clock out on a drive. They pick up a few gritty first downs and win it that way. It has nothing to do with a deficiency that the Eagles have. I think the Eagles have a good, like Cole Kubelik's been saying all week, I think they have the advantage on the defensive line against that Patriots offensive line. They have the best rushing defense in the NFL. Tom Brady's going to have to drop back and throw it 60 times. He did it last year and completed 43 of them two years before that. He completed, 30-something. He's been breaking records the last couple Super Bowls he's been in, and he doesn't have to have the guys to do it. Last year, no Gronk. I mean, this year he will have Gronk. Because of all the ways they found a way to win the Super Bowl, I just have to see you beat them to believe it. And you're not Eli Manning and Tom Coughlin and the Giants, so I'm going to go with the Patriots here 27-21. But the Eagles have their opportunities, and they're going to have to – but here's the question for you, Aaron, and we don't have much time, so answer it as quickly as you can. But if you're going up against the Patriots, it doesn't matter if you're going up against anybody else. If you're going up against the Patriots in the Super Bowl, would you rather be leading in the fourth quarter and try to stop a comeback, or would you rather be the team trying to come back and win? Because remember, the Patriots have come back in the last two.
That's a tough question. I think I would rather be trying to come from behind, because then you're not worried about trying to conserve time, keep the ball away from Brady and having to give him the ball back, because sometimes people tend to get – the Falcons did it and the Jags did it. They got complacent. I'd rather play from behind.
Honestly, me too. And I know that sounds weird. You always want to play with the lead and trust your defense. That Eagles defense, it's not that their defense I'm worried about. It's the guy on the other end. It doesn't matter how good your defense is. He's the greatest of all time. That's going to do it for Tony Mack and the Triplet. When we come back next week, we will have a Super Bowl winner. We'll give you our reaction and much more. Stay tuned, everybody. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Enjoy Alabama basketball right here on The Ump.